some violent content. Parental discretion is advised.
Well, first and foremost, I guess I'd like to say welcome to the Conduit Speaks. I'm here tonight with two pretty special guys, two guys that I've gotten to talk a bit with online and experienced some of their work. And I want to call you Denise Greenberg, but I won't do that. We will, and don't worry, I'll edit that out so that her name doesn't go there. But I'm here with producer Zach Green and writer-director Rich Powell, and I guess I'll say from Fatal Pictures, yes?
Yes.
You two are okay with associating yourselves with each other under the same umbrella?
Yeah.
Very much so. That's what we plan to do.
We've been sharing the same umbrella for quite some time together now.
Yeah, and I want to get into that because recently what's going to coincide with this interview is going to be my thoughts and a review on the website of your third film together, Familiar. But yes. As I say third, we have Consumption from 2008, Worm 2010, kind of sort of 2011.
Well, yeah, it was released and it was premiered in 2000.
Right. And then Familiar, of course.
Yes.
So I'm going to, well, first say hi to the audience. How about you, Zach?
Hi, everybody. My name is Zach.
and Rich?
Hello, everybody. And yeah, it's good to be talking and letting all you folks listen to what we have to say. I'm a listener to the show myself, and I find it inspirational and informative, and so I don't know. I appreciate being on here and having the opportunity to speak for everybody.
You read those cue cards so well.
I actually wrote them. He's reading my writing very nicely.
Yeah.
So let me start off by throwing the ball into the producers' corner here, and Rich, certainly you can chime in, but you're both kind of going to be under the microscope here in a bit, but why don't you take us back a little bit, since you are producing, along with, you know, Rich in certain circumstances. Can you talk about the genesis of your relationship and also, Fatal Pictures?
Yes, of course. I met Richard back in film school in 2002-2003 here in Toronto. And I went to school for post-production editing. That was where I was drawn in into the business. I really liked editing. That's just what caught my eye, and I really wanted to get into that. So I went to film school for post. Richard went for production, TV and film production. I met him actually third term students got to pitch a project to the faculty. Richard's film got picked up. I happened to cut that film. I was the editor on that movie called Familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. What am I saying?
Consumption.
Called The Offer. No. This was, Consumption was actually Fatal Pictures' first movie under our company. But,
Offer was our student film project.
Yeah. Back in school when me and Richard first met, it was a short film called The Offer that I ended up meeting Richard on. I got to edit that film for him.
Okay.
And in the editing room is where we really built our rapport, our working relationship, and then at a film school we went on to produce films together, and 2007 came around, and I wanted to produce and distribute and market our first movie properly under a production company, an incorporated production company. So me and Richard sat down, we spoke about that, we both wanted to do that, and we thought it was time. So 2007, we started, we sat down with an entertainment lawyer, and Fatal Pictures was born in 2007. And our first movie we released under Fatal Pictures was Consumption in 2008.
Okay. Does that sound about right to you so far, Rich?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Okay, thank God. I was hoping I wasn't wrong there.
So this is the genesis of this, I guess, is a business relationship, mutual respect, kind of built, like you said, in that editing room together.
Yeah, that's where we actually, got talking a lot and really, saw eye to eye. We both really, had the same goals and ambition and drive in the industry. We both worked really hard and wanted the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we just made good films together. And as time went on, I said to Richard, I'm like, listen, you know, I think this is a wonderful, wonderful. We had a company like before Fatal Pictures. It was just like, you know, just it was me and him, and we just had we were working together. But like 2007 came around, and I wanted to properly sign, you know, get paper signed and incorporate a company and legitimately release films under our company. So we did that in 07, and Consumption was our first film that we produced in 2008, and Richard wrote and directed, and it was based off true events about a cannibal in Germany.
Armin Mivas, is it?
Yeah, Richard knows a lot more about the story.
I've had my obsession with him over the past few years.
Yeah, you know he was gay.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, they actually ate the gentleman's penis.
Yeah, there's actually Marion Dora has a film called Cannibal. I don't know if you've seen that, but it graphically details and chronicles the days leading up to their meeting and also, the eventual demise of the other man. It's a really good film.
Oh, I was asking if that film, is that an actual, like, realistic depiction of the event, like, characters as they were in real life?
It is a...
Or is it just...
Okay. No, it is, it's not a fictionalization, by any means. It's actually, if you were to, like, go on Wikipedia or whatever and look up Armin Mivas and whatnot, this film will actually come up, and it's directed and written by Marion Dora, and it's from 06, and it's a very straightforward, very dialogue light, graphic detailing of how Mivas met Brandis online, how they got together, and what transpired with Brandis consenting to allowing Mivas to eat him while he was alive.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
The thing with Consumption, rather than kind of doing a literal telling of that story, I just kind of wanted to... What I was more interested in was just the concept of conceptual cannibalism. So what I did with Consumption was, rather than having it be between two characters that you know are meeting for consensual cannibalism, the conceit of the short film is you're just seeing a date that you believe is a first date.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is these characters have been speaking online for a while, and they're finally meeting when the film begins, and you have no idea that they're actually there for a past consensual cannibalism. So you kind of get led in on it as it's progressing. So you go from this kind of awkward date to basically, you know, consensual cannibalism, and that's the thing. The real story intrigued me, but it was just, you know, the human motivation behind willingly allowing yourself to be killed and eat, that's what really got me, and that's what I did my short about anyway.
Sure. Well, and I will say that unfortunately is the one of your three shorts that I haven't been able to see. But what I find interesting, obviously, and we can get into it more in a bit here, but with Worm and Familiar, you obviously have actor Robert Nolan kind of carrying over in those two films, and it's kind of it feels like to me when I watch your films and I experience your films that there's almost kind of this three-headed monster, this kind of band of brothers now that are kind of carrying forward. And I don't want to completely get off the whole Consumption thing, but I do want to get back to that idea of you know, Robert being a part of these last two films. But yeah, before we go there, you incorporate and Consumption is the first film that falls under the Fatal Pictures umbrella. What was that? What was that first foray into your own kind of world like for the both of you? How did that? How did Consumption go from beginning to end for you?
Personally, for me, me and Zach had been working, like Zach mentioned, we had been working together out of film school for a while on the, what I consider to be just continuing our education, working on projects, and just kind of honing our skills. And we tried a couple of different things, worked with different people, but around the time of forming Fatal Pictures, we both really wanted to take them seriously, and we both wanted to try to find some competent people to work with, some people that were perhaps ahead of us that we could learn from, and also just be a little bit more ambitious with the project. So what we did is we put our feelers out there, and we started just being honest and earnest and telling people that we're looking for collaborators, we're looking for help, and we went into the project very, very naive, but also very full of ambition. And it was exciting. It was the first time we were really, I felt like I was doing something that I could be proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And having the Fatal Pictures name behind us, it felt like we had something to stamp that product with, which we never had before. So we had a product that we were really actually making an effort with by going out and spending a bit of the money on it. That film had a budget of a couple $1,000s, and I would say the majority of it all went to the special effects.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first time we were investing our own money into it. We were actually renting good gear. And so, you know, we have a product we want to be proud of and a stamp that we want to put on it. And we believe that having that identifying product, that identifying brand, would be a good way to start. So it was exciting, and it was the beginning of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was, like Richard said, that was the first film that we released under Fatal Pictures that had, like, the Fatal Pictures stamp on it. The film actually went on to win 4 awards. It has worldwide distribution right now through a company, American Horrors, based out of Los Angeles, California.
Mm-hmm.
And, Consumption and Worm are both distributed under American Horrors, and Consumption's also critically acclaimed. If you'd go on IMDb, you could read a ton of great reviews.
Mm-hmm.
On Consumption, as well as Worm is also critically acclaimed.
Do you feel as you grow and this partnership thickens, when you start working on Worm, do you feel like there's been a natural progression? Do you look back at Consumption while you're working on Worm and think, yeah, this is the next step? We can really feel that things are different now, that there's some growth. And if so, what was different?
That's a great question. Do you want to answer that, Rich? Or
yeah, I'll start it anyway.
Sure.
I feel that during the process, I didn't necessarily realize that there has been a lot of growth. I think afterwards, when we start looking at the footage and we start editing the project, we really realized that we had made a lot of substantial growth. Our abilities had been sharpened. My writing, for instance, I thought had gotten a lot sharper because I'd been through, me and Zach edited Consumption together, and when you edit your first film together,
mm-hmm.
As me and Zach did, you really realize what was working and what wasn't working. We didn't just hand it off to somebody and say, try to make this work. We did it ourselves, and I saw a lot of things that I learned a lot about, not, you know, about trying to trim fat. I learned a lot about making my points more concise and trying to keep a flow to the story.
Mm-hmm.
Just things, a big thing I learned was transition from scene to scene. And that's something that I feel is very important. So afterwards, I personally felt watching the footage, I'm like, okay, I'm actually moving the camera now. I've got a dolly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing with, I even have a slow motion. And then of course us going from shooting DV to 16mm film was a gigantic leap. I think afterwards, when the project was finished, I was able to sit back and be like to myself, wow, we went from shooting a film with two actors in the house,
mm-hmm.
with consumption,
mm-hmm.
on digital to shooting in a high school with 30 extras on film with a crew of about 10 to 15 people over the course of 2 weekends. And it was incredible. And I think it's one of those things, if you see that you can't, it's like climbing a mountain, right? You can only focus on the steps in front of you. And then you get to the top and you look down and you're like, wow, how did I get here? And that's what Worm was. We didn't realize the mountain we were climbing until we got to the top of it. And I think that's the thing. You don't realize you're growing. You just grow. And then once you just can look back from a time and realize that you're not what you were. You've come from somewhere and you're better. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, I can kind of, in my mind, I almost imagine it like you're looking at the dailies or whatnot. And it's kind of like when Dorothy lands in Oz and the door opens and everything's in color all of a sudden. And I think it's important, you know, the people that listen to my show are pretty astute and have a fairly, you know, strong knowledge of the process. But I think a lot of what we lose sight of is, you know, whether it's a multi-million dollar Hollywood production or, some kid working in his backyard, a lot of these films, the writer, director, editor are three different people. And you have situations where, the writer hands it over to the director and then the director hands it over to the editor and it kind of just, disappears from one hand to the other. But with you two working together and so congruently in this process, what kind of like trust and respect do you have with each other when you see, you know, Rich, after the fact, when you're kind of looking at Worm and seeing that there has been some growth and some progression and seeing some really intense changes happening within yourself and your work, is it hard to sit down with Zach and let him pick it apart with you?
Oh, not at all. I don't really consider Zach as a separate. Like, me and Zach together are Fatal Pictures. It's a one filmmaking entity. Mm-hmm. So, if there was ever an issue, me and him discuss it, and we always keep the best interest of the project in mind. And the thing is, Zach is never, he understands the craft technically. Mm-hmm. Because of working with him, I've come to understand it in a similar way, and I've incorporated that into my writing. I write as an editor now. I think about editing when I'm writing. Zach would never try to impose a cut on me that I didn't feel was natural. And he would never, because he understands my style now, and that's the benefit we have of working together. Mm-hmm. He understands my tips. He understands my rhythms. So we have that shorthand. He understands what I'm trying to do. So at the beginning, me and him had lots of arguments and disagreements over things, but that was mostly in the beginning when we were coming to understand each other creatively, how our processes work. But we're very similar. We're both Capricorn.
If we had a conflict over a transition like from clip to clip, it's not like one would be right and wrong. We would just, it would be personal preference. Oh, I kind of wanted to transition like that. Mm-hmm. No, I want to use like it. But what it comes down to is we want the best for the film. So at the end of the day, that's what's going
to
be.
Yeah, what it also comes down to, and let's be frank with each other here, is that it is a rare thing for two people such as yourselves to coexist like that. It's very rare that two people could have the best interest of the film in mind and could compromise and work together when they did have differences, as opposed to one person just saying, listen, you know, this is my buck, or I've got more invested in this film. You go sit in the corner. I'm going to finish this. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff is all too common.
It is. And, you know, and I've seen it with other people, but me and Zach don't have that problem at all because, not only are we partners, but, you know, I consider him my brother, and, you know, we have a shared ego. I don't consider my success separate from his.
I honestly, like, I had totally understood. I understood what you just said, but that hasn't happened thus far. I really can't see anything like that happening. Like, Richard's the writer-director. I produce the movies, and we have an editor, and the director is usually always sitting with the editor. Mm-hmm. Working with him, telling him what kind of, no, you know what? I want a wide shot there, not that shot. And at the end of the day, we basically both have Final Cut.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's not happy with the way I want it, then we sit down until we're both happy.
Well, see, the reason, and again, you know, maybe someday I'll see consumption. I'll definitely seek it out after this.
Yeah, I'll make sure to get you a copy.
Not right, because I feel odd, you know, commenting in this way because I haven't seen that film. But there's definitely an ease and an otherworldliness about Worm and Familiar in the sense that as a viewer who can and will pick apart a film, you can sense that there's kind of a symbiotic relationship going on with the two of you because you're never distracted by anything technical in these films. It's a very kind of organic process of just kind of riding the narrative's wave along. And I think when they're, well, you know, when things aren't flowing smoothly throughout the process, I think that oftentimes that comes through in the finished product. And as I said, it's very easy to lose yourself aesthetically in Worm and in Familiar because maybe that's how it translates that you guys have this, this symbiotic relationship. 'Cause I just recently have been, turned on to the short film. Like my experience with short films were always, you know, part of anthologies, things like that, that were tied together with an overarching theme. And it was all of a sudden last year, I just started getting all these requests from people to see and screen these short films. And, you know, I kind of got a taste for them in the sense that, it's almost like watching an old Tales from the Dark Side episode or, Amazing Stories or those types of things that used to be on serialized TV. Because I love that the narrative, hits you and wraps itself up in a time frame that, that can really captivate you. And that's kind of when the first time I saw Worm, that was the first time a short film had really pulled me back to that feeling of getting everything that I wanted in this runtime that I think too often is disrespected. You have a 20-minute film, and what you two were kind of able to relay and conjure and burp out onto your audience was something really, really emotionally and psychologically frightening. And certainly Robert is a big part of that. He's absolutely brilliant. And, you know, I don't know, but.
I just want to say thank you. So it's very, very, it makes me really happy to hear that it was me and Richard's film, one of our films that made you feel that way and brought you back into kind of liking short films and respecting them again. I'm happy it was ours that could do that.
Well, I got sucked in. Like I said, I got sucked into that preconceived notion. And admittedly, I'm a pretty stubborn person, and I get set in my ways. And there were a few moments in the past 2 years and a few experiences that I had that really shattered some stereotypes and molds that I was holding on to. One of them being that a theatrical release was not worthy of my time, energy, or emotion. And Drive absolutely shattered that mold, the film Drive. And, reinstilled my love for the theatrical film. And your film, Worm, was the one that kind of broke down that wall for me.
Wow.
And I certainly thank you for that. But at the same time, when you talk about Robert's performance and Rich, you know, as you're saying after the fact, you see your writing and directing progressing and, you know, Zach, I'm sure, you know, you're there along the way and then, you know, cutting it up and looking at it. And you guys had to know you really had something.
I feel in the process of writing Worm, I felt like there wasn't any pretense. I had a very clear idea of what I wanted to do, and it felt honest, and it fed something inside of me. I don't know why I wanted to tell that story. It was just something bubbling around. So the thing is, you know, when you're writing something, if it's got a truth or if it's got worth to it. But then you go through the whole battle of trying to get it made, then you go and shoot it, and then you edit it, and then you kind of hope that it translated from what you wrote into what you wanted it to be. And I think when we started actually doing the voiceover recordings on Worm, the actual audio sessions where it was me, Zach, George Flores, the audio engineer, and Robert in the sound booth, that's when I really started to feel like, okay, I think we might have gotten what I was going for.
Yeah, like the ADR there, the voiceover.
Yeah.
It's like another character, another layer of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had to edit that film without the voiceover in it, so you got
to. Well, yeah, we had to time things out. Yeah, we had to just. It was a lot of timing out in post to make sure the voiceovers fit properly and matched his facial expressions and his body language on set.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, for those that don't know, Worm essentially is a day in the life of a high school teacher who on the outside appears to be kind of your average run-of-the-mill almost burnt out kind of going through the motions school teacher who we've all dealt with. But when you speak of this voiceover, and it's also present and familiar to an even more sickening degree, if I might say, But what you have is you get to follow Jeffrey Dodd, played by Robert Nolan, through his average school day, whether it be in the classroom, the teacher's lounge, things like that. And what's so incredible about this is that you get his you get to see his interactions with students and other teachers, and It's all the things that we've all thought at one point or another.
It's reality.
Yeah. Whether you're, going through the line at the grocery store and you're thinking to yourself, wow, this cashier really has one tooth in her whole head. or, people's little quirks and nuances that just eat you alive. And, it's just, the voiceover, like you said, kudos to both of you for being able to sync that up so incredibly astutely with facial expressions and things that were going on. But
thank you. It wasn't that easy. And also the amazing Robert Nolan. I just want to give him tons and tons of credit because he is just a wonderful, wonderful, fabulous actor to work with. He's just amazing. And not only is he incredibly, amazingly talented, he's just a very nice, polite man. He's a great guy to be around. And, I just think he's a phenomenal, phenomenal actor here in Toronto. Just wonderful. I've had me and Richard are both very happy. We've had the pleasure of coming across and being able to work with him.
Yet he just spits venom when he, when he does his voiceover.
He's incredible. He blows me away. He really does.
So you follow the teacher, and he progressively talks himself into a downright hatred of everything that exists outside of his own being, and you just follow his psychotic downward spiral, if you will. And it's 20 minutes that you will equally thank yourself for experiencing, but also hope and pray that taking a Brillo pad to your gray matter will get it out of there, because being a father, it scares me to death to think at some point my son may walk up to his teacher's desk and ask him, you have office hours. Can I get a little extra help with my algebra homework? And the teacher may be thinking, sure, I'd love to tie you up and lop your head off and whatever else. But Worm is ridiculously frightening, and I think it all hinges on Robert's performance.
Yep.
Rich, it's the narrative, the kind of the fabric that you've woven, that these little vignettes kind of ease into each other so well. And then also the sinister nature of the fact that if you open yourself up to the idea that that Jeffrey Dodd is just like you and I, it's frightening to think that that these thoughts and feelings and emotions are part of all of us. It's just what we do with them that matters.
Definitely. Definitely.
So
there's people out there all the time, whether they're teachers or someone who's working behind the cashier at your grocery store, that they are having these similar thoughts, if not even worse. You just will never know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, when you're talking about that editing process, I was talking to Zach earlier, and is it true you said that the original cut of Worm was 3 hours and 20 minutes? And you had to you had gotten it down to, I think you said you'd cut it down to 2 hours, and then you and Rich just pulled an all nighter and finally got it down to 20 minutes. Why will there be an extended director's cut of this at some point that we'll see, or
there won't be an extended director's cut, but there will be a feature length version of it.
Okay,
that's definitely something we're planning on.
Maybe I just got confused there. Okay.
I think you got a little bit confused.
Well, after we move on from Worm and get into Familiar, I do have a question that's kind of been burning a hole in my belly for almost a year. But anything else you wanna talk about or share with Worm? Anything that?
Before you get into that last question, I just want to let everybody know there are 3 clips out there on the internet, on YouTube, on Vimeo, of Worm, if you're familiar. There's a couple trailers out of Consumption out there if you want to see a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Worm is right now, it's distributed through American Horrors, and it's I think it's going to have its television debut on Christmas.
Mm.
Or like Christmas Day, I'm not exactly sure, but in the Christmas around that time, I've been told that Worm and Consumption should have its television debuts in the States.
Perfect film for the festivities.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no kidding. Christmas time inner monologue is something else altogether that falls into line with this too. Are there plans, you know, to do kind of like a Fatal Pictures like box set where you would just kind of wrap all the films, all the short films up together and have that available?
So that's a great question. We've had a few people ask us that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Rich, what do you think?
I was always thinking, it's actually funny, Zach, I didn't mention this to you, but I've been thinking about it, and it probably will never happen, but it's an idea that I had. For some reason, I just envisioned there being one more Dodd brother, and then I figured if we were to do another short, not that we're going to do that, probably not, but I was thinking we'd call it the Box Cutter Trilogy, and there would be a Box Cutter in the third film, and then we'd wrap those three, because I think those three are the most representative of our, because Consumption, as much as I love that film, it's still like our first, you can still feel the film school in us, you know what I mean? But there, to me, I look at that film and there's so much, you can see like our soul, you can see our ambition, but I think Worm is when we got technically sound, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
And then Familiar is just super polished, we'll definitely get into that puppy.
Well, yeah, I mean, Familiar, and we'll get into that in a second, like you said, but as far as like the Dodd brothers, like, even before I had thought about Robert's character's name and Familiar, like that was his, you know, somewhat slightly twisted twin brother kind of, you know, that lived in the adjacent town. But anyway, I guess the thing is, you know, people hear me talk about Worm and you know, I review it on the site and whatnot, and it's always, you know, when can we see this? How do we see this? Because a lot of times, unless these short films are packaged together and accessible on a DVD or whatnot, people are kind of curious and lost as far as where to find them. So that's something I definitely want to keep abreast of and you know, keep my listeners in the loop with and also my readers over at the site. So.
Yeah, 100%, and we're lucky enough that Consumption and Worm are distributed through American Horrors, which is worldwide, and they have a television channel in the States called American Horrors,
mm-hmm.
and it's an all-genre station where they play all genre material and films, and I don't know, I don't live in America, I'm not lucky enough to have an American passport,
mm-hmm.
but it's through your cable networks out there in the States. I'm sure if, I don't know, you can find American Horrors. That's the channel.
Okay.
I think at some point there is plans. American Horrors is going to be putting out, DVDs of their short films that they have,
mm-hmm.
that they have acquired, ours being two of them. That might be it. We're not too sure how or when that's going to happen, but I do remember hearing something about that. So, I mean, if we get information about that, we definitely let everybody know.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm hoping is just to keep everybody in the loop.
Of course. And Familiar, we're still in really early stages. We're not sure what distribution route we're going to take with Familiar. We just know we want as many people in this world to see the
mm-hmm.
film. That's all. And we're going to try and make that happen as best as we can. We might just honestly host it online for everybody.
Sure. Well, let me say this for me, you know, Worm is in my wheelhouse in terms of really reality grounded, very dark genre material. What really gets me going is something that's really reality based. 'Cause that to me is the most frightening.
Same with me. Yeah.
Yeah. Man's inhumanity to man. And, Then you get to Familiar, and I really wanted to have you guys on the show, and I was hoping that Robert would be able to be on, but I've since learned what a prima donna he is.
He's very difficult to get a hold
of. The list of demands that he had was just out of my reach. I couldn't even.
he actually wanted a certain microphone headset for the Skype, and I just couldn't do it right now. I couldn't justify
it. Yeah, it was ridiculous. And the whole, well, never mind. That's a story for another day.
Yeah.
But with Familiar, like we said, if I hadn't thought about it, I wouldn't even have realized it. But this is a Dodd, maybe a Dodd brother, right? This is John, and I like to pretend that John and Jeffrey are somewhat estranged, and live in adjacent towns, if you will. But Familiar treads a similar type of territory in terms of it's very driven by the voiceover, by the thoughts of the man. But for me, as a husband and a father who does not suffer the same pains as poor John.
I hope not.
No, my wife is just a wonderful compliment to myself, and my son is, you know, the world to me. And she's not sitting in the same room right now, so she can't hear that. Wink, wink, wink. But Familiar, it really, I don't even, like I said, I'm going to be writing this up to go with this podcast, but I still don't really know what to think of this one, to be completely honest with you.
It just blows your mind.
It's, something like that. What happened with Familiar for me, you essentially have, a husband, father who's going through his emotions, and we get the voiceover involving, you know, how he's kind of fallen apart in this this domesticated construct, if you will. And but the film is 24 minutes long, and I'm not going to say it's like a total U-turn that it takes, but he deteriorates so meticulously and slowly that what should be an incredible twist or shock to the system just becomes so sickening and accepted as part of his breakdown that it left me feeling physically ill. And I've seen it all and heard it all. But this was something altogether nauseating for me. Talk about it. Talk about, you know, obviously without giving too much away, but the mental anguish of this man and the psychosis that's festering inside him emotionally takes on a very Cronenberg-ish turn within his being.
Definitely. I think, well, the first thing, happy to be speaking with somebody who's now seen both Worm and Familiar. As somebody who's seen both films, you can kind of you can see how the films have, like you said, similar themes, but they're doing different things and saying different things. With Worm, I was exploring one type of essentially imprisonment to a certain lifestyle, to a certain mindset. And with Familiar, I'm going from the workplace into the home, into the family. And to me, I don't consider family, obviously, as any kind of imprisonment, but as those characters, as Jonathan and Jeffrey Dodge, and view life in these kind of terms, you know, these institutions are kind of imprisoning. They're confining. And in Familiar, essentially, you take somebody like Jeffrey, his twin brother John, and you put him in the home, and you're going to have certain similar reactions. And it does, obviously, I think, strike more of a nerve, and it kind of gets it's a little bit more emotionally disturbing, because it's not just strangers, it's not just your coworkers, it's your family, it's your daughter, and it's your wife, and these you know, malicious thoughts take on a whole new
level. Oh, it's just
when you bring it into the household.
Absolutely, yeah. Horrifying, and I'm going to butcher her name, but the woman who, the actor who plays the wife, Charlotte Dodd, Estrida.
Yeah.
Hey, I did it. I'm terrible with names. She, I mean, just absolutely brilliant. She pulls off this hangdog, pathetic hopefulness that just defies, sympathetic annoyance. It's, you look at her and you just want to pinch her cheeks and shake her face and then separate the flesh from the bone.
Yeah.
And
I think I might have pinched her cheeks during a tape.
She's wonderful. She was good. And just the cluelessness that this woman carries around with her. And, you know, there's moments in Familiar where you just wish you could reach into the screen and slap her and say, run, run, run.
Yeah, she really does do a wonderful job. Like when we're watching it on the monitor, like we get lost in the world these actors are creating. I think Richard does such a great job of writing these characters, and Robert and Estrida just bring them to life. It's just, it's really amazing. And like, there really aren't even words for it when you're watching it. Like,
no, and the thing that blows me away is you look at her credits, and she has a short film in 1992, and Familiar in 2011.
Well, she had a big break. She was just enjoying spending her money,
yeah,
living it up, and she finally wanted to jump back into the movie.
But what, I mean, what is this like? Because she's. You know, I don't think I'm overstating it with saying that the time that she does spend on screen is just, you can almost sympathize with poor John Dodd at certain moments.
Ouch.
But then
she understood what was required to make that character not necessarily sympathetic, but it's important that as much as John Dodd is a villain, at a certain point in the beginning, you need to kind of understand a little bit where he's coming from, right? He doesn't he starts off bad, but it's one of those things where I'm not interested in writing somebody who's evil for evil's sake.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of these villainous villains kind of, they have a point. They kind of, some of the things are like, I kind of understand, but it's always about where you take those thoughts. That's where I kind of start making the audience question their beliefs, right?
Sure.
You can go along with John and his thoughts for so long, right? At a certain point, you hit a wall and you're like, I can't go any further with you, buddy. And that's one thing that this film kind of has fun with, because at a certain point, it's not just the audience that can't go along with these thoughts. It's somebody else, the character himself, right?
Yeah, you kind of have to decide when you're going to bail on this guy.
Yeah.
Well,
also, the wonderful cinematography, we worked with a wonderful cinematographer here in Toronto, Michael Yari Davidson. We had a wonderful Steadicam operator. I'm not sure if you noticed, two of the great shots in the movie are with a Steadicam.
Mm-hmm.
and his name, Michael Heathcote, wonderful Steadicam operator here in Toronto. And Michael Yari Davidson just brought his whole crew. It was just wonderful. Everything, just cinematography, it was just, I thought it was very, very good.
Well, one of the other films that he's worked on, Fallen Before Falling, I don't even know if you know that film or not, that Davidson has worked on. I saw that at a little art house theater in New York not too long ago. And I kind of tied the two together when I was looking it up and saw that he was the cinematographer. He's really good. And I think
I'm looking that up right now.
Yeah, I think he might be poised. I think that's the name of it. Let me look it up. Yeah, Fallen.
Yeah, because I'm Fallen
Before Falling. Yeah, it's a good movie. But he has a real eye for translating emotion into the motion of the camera, and kind of carrying you along on those emotional moments. And you can definitely feel that in Familiar, because you get those long moments at the table for breakfast, or the times you get to spend together sitting in the bed with those horrible, uncomfortable silences. And he's pretty fantastic. He really can make the viewer uncomfortable with the way he lingers on things. Yeah. So, well, how do you guys?
Yeah, I haven't had the pleasure of seeing that film, but I'm actually looking right now. I know the director is also a friend of mine, James.
Okay.
I haven't had the pleasure of seeing that film yet. Here, let me just look here. Sorry.
off on a tangent. I should have just kept my mouth shut.
Yeah. Well, you got me really interested. If you're gonna compare, to cinematography styles. Yeah, so I see from 2010. I actually wouldn't mind getting my hand on this movie.
Did you read what it was about?
I haven't,
it's,
I just don't know if he actually shot this.
It's a very
awesome,
very heartstring tearing film. I'm trying to think, and we're going way off on the tangent here, but I'm trying to remember. I think for some reason I saw it at the Nighthawk in Brooklyn, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's where it was.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you guys have assembled, especially the last two films, you're assembling a pretty solid foundation here. But the thing is I keep asking and keep hoping and keep wondering. And not to diminish what you've done with shorter running times, but I want to see and experience storytelling on a grander scale from you two in terms of running time. The content is always fantastic, but the thing that I find with your films, Worm and Familiar, is when they're over, I'm not ready for them to be over. I would like to spend a little more time in these characters' heads and in their lives. Is there, going to be a segue where you guys are going to start doing just feature-length films, or will you be going back and forth between the short and the feature?
I mean, to be honest, when it comes to short films, I've kind of gotten used to that, to the idea that I don't really think we're good at making short films. I mean, I think what we do well for us. And I think the thing that's good about us, the thing that maybe people might appreciate about us, is our voice and our passion and our commitment to story and characters.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think me and Zach were designed for short films. I feel like every time we do it, it's always a struggle to keep the running time down. It's always a struggle to make the characters minimal, even though I feel like they're not. I feel like all of our films feel restrained by the confines of this smaller format.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like me and Zach were better suited for features. And obviously that would sound like a given for any filmmaker would say that about themselves. But I feel like there are certain filmmakers that they don't have that same issue with short films. They can make a 6-minute film and tell their story in 6 minutes, and they're great. But the stories that I want to tell, they barely fit into a short film. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I always feel like I could go on and I could tell a bunch of more different angles and include more characters and have more themes. And that's all feature film stuff. You know, when it comes to Worm, for instance, that was originally a feature-length idea. I wanted to do a full-length version of that,
mm-hmm.
but we just didn't have the resources, the time, and to do it. So I boiled the idea down into just, you know, 20 minutes, one day in this guy's life, did the film. But I've actually recently finished the feature-length version of Worm, writing the script. And that's where it feels natural. That's where I feel like this character can really breathe, and you can kind of have the time to build the character and the psychosis in the way I feel is going to be even more suspenseful, and it's going to be even more jarring for the audience. And I'm looking forward to doing our first feature. I think that's when people are really going to see what we have to offer. I think me and Zach have been doing, you know, we've been giving the role to the shorts, but I feel like we're destined for the features, and that's
what
we can do.
And it's great that you said that. If you read a lot of the reviews of Worm, the critic leaves it off saying, "Yeah, it ended so fast. Like I wish it kept going on longer. I wanted to see more.
Mm-hmm.
When are you making a feature film?
Mm-hmm.
You got to make features already." And it's just amazing hearing critics and just like friends, fans tell us that we really wanted more. Like Worm and Familiar, I don't know if you'll agree with this, but even when I watch them to date, they play like feature films.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't feel like they even feel or look like a short film looks or feels.
Well, you know what, Zach, that's the thing. I don't just approach them as short films. Well, it's a film. I want to make a film.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, they make short films. Oh, this is my, you know, this is my showpiece. This is for my reel. This is going to get me signed. I'm like,
yeah.
I want all that stuff too, but I also want to make a good story. I want to make this thing be standalone. I want it to tell a story and grab you. So I don't look at a short film as, oh, it's just a short film. No, it's a film. It just happens to be 20 minutes instead of 80. You know?
No, and there's a distinct progression and resolution to the narrative in these films too, in that, and it's not so much a three-act structure that I'm talking about. It's just kind of the ebb and flow of a film period. And I get and I agree with what you say in terms of the way it's structured, the way it looks, and the way it's presented, that it doesn't fall into that stereotypical graft of the short film, if you will. You know, so is that then where the focus is right now, is tightening up this feature-length script for Worm and kind of exploring the options and finding out how to make that happen?
I would say definitely. I mean, before we got on the line with you, that's what I was doing. I was working on the script, and that's definitely what Zach wanted to go full steam ahead with. You know, Familiar hasn't really even been seen by anybody yet. We've only been sending it out to certain people to check out, and we're still waiting to get a festival premiere.
Mm-hmm.
But So we're going to push that. We want people to see that. But, yeah, in the meantime, I've been devoting myself to really tightening the script up and getting ready to try to deliver on the promise of the short in terms of bringing that character for everybody to see. Because that's the thing you said a lot. There is this kind of derogatory view on short films. And as much as I wish that wasn't there, I realize it is there. And I think that I want the character of Jeffrey Dodd to be in a medium where more people will be able to experience him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to do. I want to bring that character to as many people as possible.
I think the first feature film from Fatal Pictures is definitely going to be the Worm feature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's hopefully the next project that Fatal Pictures will be producing. Will for sure be a feature film, and we're hoping it's definitely going to be the Worm feature debut from us.
Great, and please tell me that that you really, really, really don't picture anyone else doing this other than Robert.
No, of course.
I mean, tell you that. Sure.
I understand it doesn't mean it's going to happen, but that's, I mean, he is Jeffrey Dodd, yes?
If 100%. You're going to put up... Yeah, I mean, he's phenomenal, honestly. I would love, absolutely love nothing more to make the movie with him.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if this guy over here says, here's money to make the movie, but
mm-hmm.
under one stipulation, to get my money, I really need you or to go after this potential actor and you have my money. I probably think me and Richard would probably have – well, I don't know – Well, I do know. Me and Richard would have to go that
right.
way.
Right. So, you know.
It's either make a movie or don't make a movie, right? I mean.
Yeah.
I know.
That said, you would just need to look at Robert's performance. And I would think that anybody who understands what Worm is would want to have Robert involved in that.
Well, yeah. He has a critically acclaimed performance in our short film that's won awards, and it's on television. He's absolutely phenomenal, and... I think he is this character. He created it. Well, Richard created it, but Robert brought it to life.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let's be honest. You know, you've listened to the show. You know I have an obsession with this actor. If a studio came forward with the money and said, you know, we'll do it, but it's Danny DeVito or nothing, you'd do it. Danny DeVito would become Jeffrey Dodd.
I'd say, hey, Danny, what's up? and that's only because if that would even happen, that would only be because it would be a stipulation on getting, the finance. But like Richard said, if any of the investors, like, they see the short film and they see his critical acclaim and everything he's done and brought to the table, it would almost be silly of you not to want to use him.
Right, but what it comes down to is these filthy shit stains that'll turn around and say, well, the script is great, but we want to appeal to a wider audience, so we're gonna push for these five people.
Yeah.
You know, so
that usually is what happens.
Yep.
And if that's the way I'm gonna get your money, then I'll probably do it.
Right, and that's how Tyler Perry has made his living, and Hayden Christensen has been, you know, drug up from the dead year after year after year, put into these films. There's a long line of bankable, soulless, talentless shit stains that are paraded in front of the silver screen on a regular basis, but that's neither here nor there. And that is only the opinion of the Conduit Speaks and does not represent the opinion of Richard Powell or Zach Green.
Well, here, I want to definitely make a couple of things clear, though. First of all, there might be a situation where somebody would say, you can make Worm, but you can't have Robert.
Mm-hmm.
That might happen, but that person would be an idiot for making that suggestion, first of all, because I don't believe it would be a better film without Robert. It would, and just my ability to speak to Robert and work with Robert is going to guarantee that film, at the very least, is going to have an amazing performance. And going into a film, having that already in the bag, having that in confidence, knowing you have that, is a great start.
Sure, sure.
I don't exactly see a lot of studios lining up to give us big bucks for a Worm feature film.
No, but
here's the thing. Especially when you actually see within the Worm feature film script,
mm-hmm.
studios aren't lining up to give us money for that. And I also don't think you're going to have a lot of actors that they would want to put in that role wanting to play this character, because there's a reason why these films don't get made. There's a reason why Worm is original.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody wants to do it.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important, and that's why me and Zach are going to do it. And unless Robert dies or somebody offers us a full
Jesus Christ.
It's not going to be with anybody else, but probably Robert and Zach, and that's how you're going to get the one feature. Not saying that's going to 100% be the case or not, mm-hmm. but I couldn't imagine anybody who appreciates Worm and wants to invest in a future version of that, not wanting Worm to be part of that.
Right.
And that's my opinion as well. Obviously, we could speak about a million different scenarios, you know, the asteroids could be Earth, and whatever, it doesn't matter then, right? But in reality, what I see happening, you know what I mean? I think that is more than likely what's going to happen. Anything can happen, though. I totally understand that, and I get where that's coming from. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
We'll roll the dice, and we'll see.
It's, it's a tough fight that artists like you fight, but it's also the types of battles that become inspiration for future generations of filmmakers and other artists to continue on. And it's exciting to hear that there is a feature length film on the horizon. It's more importantly than that, it's incredible to finally sit down with both of you and let our listeners hear you and to kind of come to the realization that what 99% of the public thinks of you is not necessarily true. You are pretty good guys. And, but
despite what they tell you, buddy.
But what I do want you to do is make me a promise that you're going to, keep us all kind of posted on what's going on here.
100%. Yeah. Definitely.
Because I think what's really important is to kind of continue to keep the public, keep you guys in the public's eye and, let us know when we can see what you're doing. You know, cause fortunately for me, I'm privileged enough to be able to kind of, you know, have the inside track with this kind of stuff. And I know it's hard. Well, I know it's hard for some people to hear about it and not be able to see it.
Well, you're on iTunes, which is great. So a lot of people can easily find the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Richard will definitely be, promoting it when it's out. And I just want to thank you very much. It means a lot. It means maybe more to us to be on your show than for you to have us on your show. Like, we make these movies for people like yourself and the fans and the public, and you really understand and grasp our movies and understand what they are. And we're so appreciative that you comprehend and just like our movies. It means a lot that you're having us on your show, so many more people out there can hear us. It means a lot.
Well, thank you guys. You both have been a pleasure, and trust me, the circles that I run in, the conversations regarding Fatal Pictures and what you guys are doing, it really is a wave of excitement in the genre community.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Definitely, and we will have you on again, hopefully with Robert as well.
Yes.
And
I hope so. Yes, we will do that.
Good deal. Well, thank you, Zach. And
you
Rich and or Richard, whatever you prefer.
Sometimes we call him Dickface.
And on that note, thank you so much to both of you and everyone who's listening right now. We're going to keep you posted. Everything that I hear, you'll hear about what these two fantastic talents have coming up. So thank you again.
Thank you very much.
And we will talk to you soon, okay?
Amazing. Thank you very much, Chris. Have a great
you too.
Night.
Take care, guys.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care.